Welcome to Theology in the Raw, where tough questions are raised, easy answers are avoided, Christianese cliches are mocked, and the Bible is studied with fresh eyes. This is not your grandmother's Sunday school class, folks. This is Theology in the Raw. And now here's your host, Dr. Preston Sprinkle.
Hello, friends, and welcome to my show, Theology in the Raw. I'm glad you joined us, and a special welcome to some of my international podcast listeners. I just looked at the, analytics? Is that what it's called? I'm not too media savvy, so I'm dependent upon my producers here to show me what in the world's going on out there with you listeners, but apparently I have listeners from Hong Kong, Thailand, Norway, Sweden, Mexico, Malaysia, and several other countries outside of the U.S. of A. So a special welcome to you if you're listening from around the world. Touched and humbled and amazed that there's people around the world listening to this podcast. So welcome to all of you who are not in America, and welcome to you who are in America. This is apparently a global podcast. I've been looking at some of the stats on which of these episodes y'all have been downloading. So for those of you who are in Hong Kong, y'all is a weird, funky, American way of saying you all in the plural. So y'all, which episodes have you downloaded the most? You ready? You ready for the top three? Drum roll, please. Number one, believe it or not, it was the episode that I talked about the rapture. Apparently, I thought questions about the rapture were kind of not that interesting anymore. I knew it was huge back in the 70s with Hal Lindsey and other debates that were blowing up all over the place in Christianity about the rapture. And maybe in the 80s and 90s started to wane. But now when I teach my college students, I rarely, if ever, get questions about the rapture. People just, I guess younger people aren't really asking this question anymore, but apparently they are because it's the most downloaded episode. Number two, the second most downloaded episode has been when, I forget the title, something like Women in Ministry or Women in the Church. I talked about the roles of women in the church and some debates about whether or not women can serve in positions of pastoral leadership, be it an elder and teacher. And I kind of just wrestled with that. And I'm currently kind of just working through that very, very complicated and highly debated, highly volatile question. So that was number two, that episode on women in the church. And number three was the episode where I talked about how we do church. What does it mean to do church? Now, that's, I say that tongue in cheek because church in the Bible refers to people. So that's just a weird phrase. We often think of it in terms of a building or a service or how we go about Sunday mornings and so on and so forth. And so the very phrase, how do we do church, kind of exposes a strange view of what church is. And so I think I did a few podcasts on that, didn't I? I think I did a few where I talked about different questions I have about why do we do the things that we do? Why do we preach sermons in the way that we do? Why do we dress the way we do? Why are the services organized the way they are? And just kind of explored that. And so apparently you guys are exploring it too. So yeah, number one, rapture. Number two, women in the church. Number three, how do we do church? And there was a bunch of others that were fairly high up on the list. So again, thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate it. And wish we can hang out in person. Maybe someday we can make that a reality. Another quick announcement before we dive into some of our questions. Are you ready for this? I should have saved the drum roll for this one. I only have one drum roll in me. I'm not going to do it again. I only got one, folks, and it's gone. I should have used it for what I'm about to announce right now. Are you ready? This is huge. This is huge. People in the studio here don't even know about this. As of 2 days ago, Eternity Bible College, where I serve as a vice president of the Boise Extension, Eternity Bible College is now fully accredited, folks. The fans go crazy. Now, I don't know if that means anything to you, but check this out. Accreditation. can take years. It took us, it was 9 years ago when we started pursuing accreditation. I guess that's a correct pronunciation, right? Accreditation. And we had to hire a full-time person, pay him a full-time salary. Well, I don't know if we paid him full-time. We were working full-time just to focus on accreditation. And this just, I mean, we've flown out to Florida every year for the last, gosh, I don't know, 8 years or something, four, maybe 5 years to meet with the accrediting body. I mean, this is, it's just a grueling process. We actually got denied in February. They said, nope, we're not going to accredit you. But we worked on a very, very lengthy, in-depth appeal. I think that's what it's called, an appeal. And they looked at that appeal, or was it repeal? No, I think it's appeal. And they looked at it and said, you know what? You guys are right. This, when we denied you, it was actually not right. It was unjust. And we're going to reverse our decision so you guys are fully accredited. So now more than ever, folks, is the time to go to Eternity Bible College. We are now fully accredited. What does accreditation even mean? Well, what it does is it brings in a third party to examine how you are reaching the goals that you're setting out to reach. So for instance, you know, we're a Bible college. So we teach Bible classes and theology classes and people say, well, what are you trying to do? Well, we're trying to produce people that love Jesus more. It's like, well, that's great. That sounds awesome. How do you assess that? How do you know you're doing that? How do you measure that? Like, how do you have these goals set out, and how are your exams related to that? How are your assignments? How is your curriculum? I mean, you start digging beneath the Christianese surface, and you begin to see, like, this is actually really tough. How do we know that we're accomplishing the goals that we are? So this third party comes in, this accrediting body. It happens to be ABHE, the Association of Biblical Higher Education, and they comb through all of your curricula, your library, your staff, your faculty, admin, all this stuff, and just they want to see, are you meeting your goals that you're setting out to meet, and how do you know? And when you're not, what do you do? So it's actually a very helpful process to help us refine our education to make sure that what we are trying to do, that we're actually accomplishing. Accreditation also, I mean, we live in a society that does value accreditation. I mean, I've had parents, ask me, is your college accredited? Because I don't want Johnny to go to your college if it's not accredited. And so sometimes I ask them, like, well, what does accreditation mean to you? And they kind of say, well, I don't know. It's just colleges are supposed to be accredited. And if they're not, they're lame colleges. You know, it's kind of the idea. I'm like, well, it's... You can be a school that does incredible education and not be accredited. It does help with things like government funding, but actually I don't know if you know this, but as a college, we don't accept government funding. We do whatever we can to keep tuition costs so low that people won't need to take out loans and grants and everything to come here. And what does that do? Well, it preserves the purity of our educational system. The government can say nothing. There's no threat. There's no collateral that the government has to dangle in front of us saying, well, if you don't teach this, then we're going to take away your grant. We're like, we don't need you. We're offering Christian education with zero government kind of involvement or meddling in our business. And so for most schools, though, that's not the case. They need government grants, government scholarships and loans and all this stuff. But we don't do that. So for us, accreditation in that sense isn't really a big deal. It does matter when students want to go on to graduate school. Now, if they go on to like seminary, we've had students go to all kinds of seminaries, including Talbot and Masters and Gordon Conwell and Beeson and Fuller and Westminster. And I mean, when it comes to seminaries, you know, they look at us and they're like, well, you're not accredited, but you guys are doing good, great stuff. We know the faculty, we know the students, and we'll accept your students. So we haven't had a huge problem students getting into graduate work, graduate studies in theology. It would matter if our students wanted to go on and get like an MBA or something, or a nursing degree. Like in that case, especially if it's a secular school, they will look at, you know, was your undergraduate institution accredited? So that does make a big deal. And so anyway, that's a long celebration, but I'm so excited. This is just a huge, like, corner that we have turned. So I'm so excited that we're now accredited. So now is the best time to come to Eternity Bible College in Simi Valley, Boise, Idaho, or online. My listeners from Hong Kong, you can take Eternity Bible College classes online in your living room in Hong Kong, and you can pay the same fees that all of our American students pay. Let's jump in with that long delay and let's see what we got here. Okay, so my first questioner says, I recently received my driver's license, and when I did, they asked if I'd like to join the organ donor program. I live in Illinois, and the program is very big with the Secretary of State's office. My question is, as a follower of Jesus, is it morally acceptable to have my organs harvested after I die? And then he goes on to reference a talk that apparently John Piper gave where he, talked about and he would be against, I wonder, it seems that John Piper is against, is it cremation? Is he against cremation and organ donation? He would advise against cremation and wondered if organ donation can be viewed the same way. Oh, so Piper is against cremation, but he hasn't talked about organ donation. So my questioner is wondering about organ donation. I've never had a problem with that. I on my license, I think, Let me check my license. I think I'm a donor. Am I not a donor? Oh, I'm a donor. I'm a donor. So if I get in a wreck, my liver will go inside somebody else's body, apparently. So I don't know. I guess my answer is I think it's fine because I'm a donor. I've always taken the view that the future resurrection body will not be made up of the same stuff that are from our old body. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like God's going to take our literal skeleton and you know, bring those bones to life. I mean, in a sense, if you've been dead for a while, you're just a pile of dust anyway, right? So whether you're cremated and you turn to dust, or you sit there for a few hundred years and you turn to dust, I don't think it's, this could be another interesting question. I do think that there is probably, I think I have good biblical grounds for this, that there's physical resemblance between the resurrection body and our old creation body, if you will. When Jesus was resurrected, they recognized him, but did they? Huh. There is sort of a glorification element there that made him a little bit difficult to recognize, but at the same time, he was Jesus, and when people did kind of have their eyes open, they did see that it was him. I don't know what else to say. I don't think I have a problem with donating organs. Do you? What am I missing here? Email me, pmsprink@gmail.com. That's pmsprink@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. I don't have anything else beyond that. Next question. Who makes people married, God or the state? Ooh, good one. And this questioner, by the way, is a fellow Dodger fan and was bemoaning the 6-game losing streak that our Dodgers went through. In any case, what makes people marry God or the state? I'm going to say just really quickly and clearly, it's God that makes people married. We live in a society where, as good citizens, we need to take part in societal things, you know, that as good citizens we should. So when we are married before God and the state says, okay, to be recognized as married, this is what you should do, then we should do that as well. I don't think there's any reason to boycott sort of the state sanctioning of marriage. We turn in our marriage license and so on. But if you're on a desert island, I think you can get married to another woman. But you're committed to that person before God, which means, and this follow-up question here, which means if you get divorced, if divorce is sort of in the air and a conversation, you're still married. You can't say, well, we weren't recognized by the state, therefore we're not really getting divorced. We're just not, you know, going to be married anymore. It is recognized by God. And that means that you are married. You are totally committed to each other for life till death do you part. My name's Preston. Thanks for listening to Theology in the Raw.
For more information about Preston, please visit his blog, Theology in the Raw, or his website, PrestonSprinkle.com.